You're listening to KRBS 107.1 in Oroville, California. Stay tuned for Left Turn on Bird Street. Notebooks and newsbeats, hear that piano rail. Take down the fax ace, write up the tale. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace. Trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street. Well, good morning. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street on KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Thanks for joining us this morning. My name is Dan Gelrity, and I'm here with my colleague,
Tom Nato.
Thanks for joining us. And we have in the studio with us this morning, General Manager...
Station Manager,
Marianne Norzer. And the reason we have Marianne in here is because we listened to her talk about the 24-hour... programming now of KRBS, and it was at 7 o'clock, and our eyes weren't quite wide open. So we're going to ask her a little bit more about it and have her explain it to us so she can explain it to you.
Explain it again because I didn't really get it, you know, the first time around. A phrase that I used often in school.
Well, we've been attempting for a while to go 24/7 programming and web stream this radio station. We've gotten closer than we've ever have. Now, we've tried it out over the weekend, and it was successful except for a little buzz, so we are going to take it down for a little while and get rid of the buzz that we hear and bring it back up.
May I interlude here?
Yes, please.
The 24/7/365, that's the current buzzword.
Right. So that's what we are, right?
Right.
24/7/365. You know, I hate that buzzword. Though, you know, it's so business-like, isn't it? You know, we're here 24/7. No,
and it's that up a get-goer kind of expression.
Right. The other thing that Marianne informed us of this morning is another thing that the station has been working on for some time, and we're very pleased to hear that it's in the final stages. That would be the web streaming of programming on KRBS. And Marianne, could you tell our listeners about that?
Well, definitely. We will be web streaming on Live 365 here really soon. The one thing that's holding us up right now is royalty fees. Those things really kind of kick our butt here at the radio station. The royalty fees is what we pay for playing the music, the money that supposedly goes to the musicians for playing their music. But we've got a bill that we have to pay until we get approval from one of the royalty companies. We're going to have to hold off, even though we've already paid for the streaming. We will start as soon as we pay the big royalty bill we got hanging over our head. At that point, then we will go on. So we'll be not only 24/7, but we'll be all over the world.
So this is where our listeners come in. We would like to urge you to make a generous contribution to KRBS. You can do that by calling us up at 534-1200 or coming by the station at 2076 Bird Street and making a most generous contribution.
See, Dan, I had to figure this way. If you gave a dollar, and I gave a dollar, and Marianne gave a dollar,
right,
and Kathy gave the other 497, we'd be home free.
Did you hear that, Dan? Yeah, I guess the fund, $500 is the goal for this one, right? Yeah,
exactly.
So $500, and once the $500 comes into possession here at the station can go be heard around the world. So really think of it, for $500, we can get our message around the world.
And look at it this way, with the way that the Bush has handled the economy, that's only really about 85 cents.
Yeah, that's right. It's only worth 85 cents. 80 if it's Canadian, no less.
Right, exactly.
Now, we're really excited. We're really excited about that because it, for all the programming on KRBS, it can, you know, increase the scope of our message and the distance and people that can hear us. And I think it will ultimately help the station and people that listen to the station regularly when they go out of town. They can bring their laptop with them and they can listen to us. So
now, Marianne, how does this change the programming, if at all?
Well, it adds a bunch of hours of programming.
Of what?
Depending on how we can work it, one of our main goals is to rebroadcast our day programming in the nighttime, so people that are working and don't get to hear the radio, they could still hear some of the local programming that we do.
So they'd be just like us. If we didn't get it the first time, we could hear it again.
That's right. That's right. Now, I know this is maybe getting a little bit too deep into it, excuse me, but when we do raise the $500 from our generous listeners to pay the royalty so we can get on Live 365, and you can make your donation by calling 534-1200 or come by 2076 Bird Street and make your generous contribution. I'm not being so subtle about this, am I?
You could also go online at www.radiobirdstreet.org, and I think our PayPal account's still working there.
Yeah, so you don't even have to get out of your pajamas. You just go right to your computer and donate that money. In fact, that's what I think I'll do tonight. I forgot to bring my checkbook, so I'll go use PayPal tonight.
Oh, good. You'll be our guinea pig to make sure it's
that's
still
right.
working. Let me know.
Okay, I will. I know what I was going to ask. So I'm a little familiar with Live 365, so when the time comes, we'll obviously announce it on the program. Our listeners what will they need to do? Go to the Bird Street website, and there'll be an icon there. You click on it, basically. Will they have to enroll in Live 365?
I think Live 365 did become a subscriber-based thing. I remember that in the talk, where basically it doesn't cost you anything, but you do have to register. And they did have a fallout of listeners for a little while, but it shortly thereafter they built all the way back up. So you will have to subscribe, and basically that's just what giving your name and your email address.
Right.
Well, is this going to be relatively simple? Because when I first encountered 365, I concluded you have to be something of a geek to figure out how to do all that. Have they refined that any more?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
They have.
Okay,
they have good. Simplified it because there's a program I listen to it on dial up, no less, and it comes through. It comes to you pretty good. I can't think of the name of the program, but they play this kind of schmaltzy lounge music. It's called Atomic Cafe. They play these schmaltzy...
I've heard that show.
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually. Mm-hmm. They play these weird lounge songs and old public service advertisements. But once you go in there, you're right. You go in there and you subscribe the first time, and you have to send them your email address, and that's about it. And then, you know, you have the ability on there to permanently, you know, you have your membership, you know, the password in there. So you just click on it, and you can select your favorite programs. So you go in there. I guess when you initially find it, you're going to have to do a search. You have to look for KRBS, and then you're just going to have to click on that and add that to your favorites. It's very easy.
Okay.
You know, it's very easy.
Well, we will be coming up with our new website also with this. We have that.
What's that going to look like?
It's really pretty.
Really?
Pretty?
It's really cute.
Is it
cute?
It isn't feminine,
it's
is it?
It's real masculine. You know?
Oh, God, yeah, okay.
But we will be coming up with that. That's pretty much done. We're working on getting the Live 365 logo on the very front page, so you can go. You could open up the website, click on that, and it will take you to the listening online page, so you can listen easily that way. But yes, the new website will be up right along with the web streaming.
All this represents a significant accomplishment, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think, you know, not to overstate the case, but this is really, Marianne, for our listeners who don't know, you know, because of KRBS's stature in the low power FM arena, testified in front of the Federal Communications Commission. When was that? In February?
February 8th.
Yeah, February 8th. So KRBS really is at the kind of the cutting edge, the leading edge of this, because a lot of the low-power FM stations, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of them have got license, but they've never gone on air. A lot of them are kind of church-affiliated. So KRBS is really filling the function that low-power FM stations are designed to, and that is to provide local original programming. Am I not right?
That's right. So,
if this is a congressional commission or committee, I can just hear it now. Are you now or have you ever been a low-power radio station? Speak up.
My attorney advises me to invoke my...
Which you no longer have, by the way, thanks to U.S. Patriot.
Right.
Well, I would like to share one thing with you. As being of the stature that we are this... low-power station is known all over the world.
Really?
Yeah, because of what we've done and because of the barn raising and everything that we have...
How do you figure that? Who told somebody in Czechoslovakia about KRBS?
Dan.
No. Well, okay. Let me say, what about Nigeria?
Okay. Let me get to my point before it falls out of my head.
Wait a second. I had a guest over from Nigeria
that's
at my
true,
house last
that's
week.
True.
I told them about it.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
You're right.
From Nigeria knows. I know okay, we know have people in Sweden.
Continue. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Oh, well, because of this, this last week, we had our first FCC investigation.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It wasn't us, was it?
Yeah, it was all your guys' fault, and I've been meaning to talk to you about this.
Really?
No,
really?
No.
I mean, but you were...
We did. We had an FCC last Friday. FCC investigator came to our door, and we had to... do your basic... We had an inspection for the first time.
To see what? What are they looking for?
To make sure you're following the rules that they put forth, like you're doing your daily operating logs, and you have your license, and you're not overpowering and encroaching on other stations.
They didn't go through our mailbox, did they?
They did not. No, he's a really nice guy. The one thing that we did have a little problem was an EAS system, because we haven't been able to afford our emergency alert system that we are mandatorily supposed to have. So the good thing that came out about it is the FCC investigator was a very nice guy and happened to know someone in Sacramento. So on his way home back to San Francisco, he called his Sacramento friend and found us an EAS system.
Wow, fantastic.
Really? Hey.
So the FCC guy really helped us out. So we'll be able to get our EAS system and be in compliance.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
He actually helped us out.
And this gentleman was all happened to be one of the investigators that went down and raided Santa Cruz Liberation Radio.
Oh, geez,
that took them
on the pirate radio.
Yeah. But he was a nice guy, and Kathy had him all warmed up by the time I got here, so he was kicked back with his feet up on the desk talking.
All the T's were crossed and I's were dotted.
We did okay.
Great.
Yeah.
No, that's fantastic. Well,
it's nice to be legit.
That's right. Well, you know, for our listeners' purpose, you know, I mean, the KRBS really is serving a purpose here in Oroville. And, you know, we can spread the message once we get the funds, you know, really around the world with Live 365 now.
You know, and that really is the important thing about this station. We know that it's not that we're not supported in this town with the money, because we don't make a lot of money, we know it has a whole lot to do with how far we reach.
Right.
So there's a reason that KPFA brings in $1 million when they have a pledge drive, and that's because of how many people they cover.
Right.
And the wattage of their thing. So with 100 watts radio, we are limited on who we are requesting money from.
This just occurred to me. If we get web streamed, can we put one of those little cameras in here that televises on that? Us sitting here becoming televised stars?
In fact, I'm going to be buying a little webcam so we can do that.
That means I have to take a shower before I come in here. Huh?
Well, you can't smell over the TV. The TV's advanced quite a bit, but you can't smell yet.
Darn, I thought they had invented smell-o-vision. They talked about that at school in the 60s.
And believe me, you're lucky.
Well, Marianne, thank you very much for the update.
Thanks for bringing me in.
There's really a lot. It really is. It's a very exciting time for KRBS. And, you know, for the listeners, we would urge you, really, if you haven't already, to make even a small donation, because $500 isn't that big of an amount. If we can get, you know, several of our listeners to donate $5 or $10, you know, that's maybe $50, $100 right there.
Well, we go through the transmogrifications process of from pretty small to, hey, very big.
Yeah, right. What did you have anything else to say, Marianne?
No, but I appreciate you guys letting me share this with everybody on your show because it is so popular. I know you have a lot of listeners out there.
Oh, well, thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Mean both of them? Have we gone up to three now?
Well, it really is. This is a very exciting time. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you
very much.
Again.
This is a very exciting time for KRBS, and not to belabor the point, but we would really like our listeners, if they could, we have a $500 goal, and as soon as that $500 goal is reached, met, we can turn on the Live 365, and we can be heard anywhere around the world. And that really, all the programming, and we have some excellent programming at this station.
And I'm begging, please do it. It'll save me a lot of heartache if you can hear this in
yeah,
Marysville.
Well, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other Monday on KRBS 107.1 FM, and we're also heard on WCRV in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania. So thanks for joining us today. My name is Dan Gowerthy, along with
Tom Nato.
And now that we've beat the dead horse on the fundraising, and pick up your phones and call now 534-1200, one last plug there, and we'll be saying this throughout the show today. We want to discuss, first out of the gate, is our own personal situation on the internets. For our loyal listeners and people who frequent our blog, you may have noticed that thing looks just bad. It looked bad up until last night.
Right, well, not Tom? Only looked bad, looked different. We had to, we were crashed, and then we had to substitute something else. Then that was sort of crashed too, and then we've got it all back to where it was to begin with.
Right. Now, I can't help but wonder if this, now that we're, the FCC investigator has come through, and we got a clean bill of health at KRBS. I can't help but wonder if there's some connection there, Tom. Think about it. Our blog about 3 weeks ago, on the July 16th to be exact, 15 days ago, went kapooey. The FCC investigator comes here on Friday, leaves Friday afternoon, Sunday afternoon. You get it back to normal. I don't know.
Are you saying that Marianne trashed our site so that we couldn't be visible to
no.
a federal investigator, just in case?
Well, I hadn't thought of it in that terms, you know, but I thought maybe the FCC crashed our site as a forewarning, and then once they came here and saw that we're just a bunch of normal people, they said, oh, okay.
This is an example of what could happen to you.
Right, right.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, but your explanation is as plausible.
Yeah, we're
but
putting
we don't
the top
see-
drawer, so to speak.
Right. So, for all of our listeners out there, and we know who you are. So
both we're, of you.
Yeah. We'd like to have you come back to our blog. It is located on the, not the internet, it's the internets. It's
right.
You can find us at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. Or if you're really lazy, you can just go on Google and type in Left Turn on Bird Street or even LTOBS. And we show up at the top of the queue. So we certainly invite you to participate in our show and participate in our blog. So now that
I want you to know, Dan, that as soon as we got fixed,
yes.
Fixed ourselves,
yes,
not like dogs, mind you, but I immediately wrote a note saying that Alberto was off the... no longer in trouble for the suspicions that he had been the one doing it.
Yeah, Alberto, you're off the hook, so you can come
Alberto,
back.
reverse slash, reverse slash.
Yeah, Roberto, have you looked at this guy's blog lately?
No, I haven't. What's it say, if anything?
Just go to it. It's I don't even know the name of it, but I think if you can link up through the comments in our section, but he's talking about he made a trip through the country. Now, Alberto, for those of you who don't listen to us regularly, is a rapture person. He believes that the rapture is
ultra
coming.
Ultra-conservative. Believe anything he's told.
But he talked about making a trip throughout the country. I mean, it's scary and laughable. He made a trip through the country.
That's the 13 colonies and then the rest.
Right.
I mean, that's where his mind is.
No, he went to... throughout the country converting homosexuals. That was what the story.
So he was hanging around gay bars talking up a storm, was he? That sounds like a good cover story, doesn't it? No. I'm only here to, right. to
for scientific purposes.
You know, that's what makes America great.
Yeah, there's kooks everywhere. Oh, before we get started, you know, Tom, I'm going to quiz you, and for all the Oroville residents, maybe I guess we can't have a quiz because we don't really have a prize to give away. I can give away a dime, but then I think we get in trouble with the government for giving money away. But do you know what happened on August 1st, 1975 in Oroville? Any idea? Bueller? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? Anyone?
I couldn't guess.
Okay. Today, August 1st, 2005.
30 years anniversary.
The 30th anniversary of the Oroville earthquake in 1975.
Oh, and I was, you know where I was at that? I was working at the Chico paper.
Oh, did you feel it?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
And I'll tell you a funny story about that. The newspaper in Chico was an older building than it is now. The earthquake occurred at lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
There were two reporters, or the reporters were, everybody was in the news when it happened. It was just before noon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you should feel the earthquake, you know? So everybody ran out of the building, you know, fearing that it would collapse, and except I was one of the people. You know, this is going to go
right.
Anyway, some people though, there was a beam across the middle of the newsroom separating business from editorial,
right?
And some of these really crafty people went and stood under that, saying, "Well, this is the safest place."
Right.
So I came back later, and this is what kind of newspaper it is. Is then they went to lunch, right? Leaving
right.
myself and Grant Sims, another reporter, former AP reporter, in there doing our stories. We started getting calls. The phone rang. Phone started ringing off the hook. You know, it was AP, UPI at the time, calling us. Finally, what? The earthquake? Earthquake? Oh yeah. Well, yeah. So it was a little tremor, you know, and so. To find out about it, we had to go turn on the AP machine that the managing editor used to turn off to save money.
Right? Right? Is that right? Turned it off.
Right? Anyway, so two things happened. The editor comes back and says, "What's this machine doing on?" And so we kind of told him, and he didn't like that. Then the next day we found out from the inspector came in to see if there's any damage, is the worst place to stand was on that fake beam.
Oh, is that right?
That was just an illusion of the safety.
Right.
So the sissies that ran out of the building like me were right.
Now, I was going to give a plug for a program on Thursday. I bumped my knee on the stool beneath the counter here, and for some reason it disconnected the brand new computer screen we have here in the studio. And I believe that's okay, Marianne says. I was going to give a plug. I believe I wanted to say it was Ron's program on Wednesday.
Ron, the weatherman?
Ron, what it said right
Ron
here.
Ron Ullman.
Oh, what time is his show?
Oh, 2:00.
2:00.
Wednesday, 2 to 4.
It's a history of classic rock. So he's going to talk about the classic rock and roll that happened on August 1st, 1975. So tune into his show this Wednesday afternoon.
You know, that should be good. There's a female disc jockey on KVMR.
Yes.
No, wait a minute. This would be, I think, the one in Chico. KFRC.
Mm-hmm.
Not KFRC. KZFR, right? KZFR.
Right.
Who does that. She goes back through every year and pulls a hit from the
right.
year. And it's a really kind of interesting and pleasant show. I listen to it. Well, I'm not listening to KRPS, of course.
Of course, of course. Well, let me ask you, what do you remember... what the magnitude of that earthquake was, or was it a big shaker?
It was 7 point something.
Wow.
It wasn't 8 or anything, but it wasn't.
7 is big.
Yeah.
You get about 7 because you think.
Well, the big worry so that people understand is that why AP cared about it at all was the Oroville Dam.
Yeah, of course.
It's the world's largest earth-filled dam, and if it collapsed, the agricultural region and possibly the state capital would have been flooded over.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So A 7.0, you know.
It was 7 something, you know.
Well, you know, like the Northridge earthquake 10 years ago down in Los Angeles, that was like a 6.2 or 6.3.
Well,
just because of where it struck,
yeah,
it did
I could
damage.
Be wrong. The and there were after tremors. I was sitting doing the city council for Marysville, for Chico, and they had it happened again, and with the chandeliers moving around. I'm not positive about that, but it's in the 7 range. We can look that up on the internet.
Well, we can look it up on the internet, or you can just tune in on Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock and find out the answers to these questions.
Who's going to?
Ron.
Oh, well.
Ron's Classic Rock Show. He's going to discuss this.
Is he?
Yeah. That's what my plug was for.
He's going to talk about the earthquake.
Yeah. There was a little thing on the screen here.
Why?
Why?
Well, it's not rock and roll. Oh,
it's
rock
and
roll.
Come on,
okay,
Tom.
God, dance, think, oh.
Tom.
But I did get it.
You're having another senior moment here. Another senior moment.
Well, I wanted to let you guys know, Ron's History of Classic Rock, for the first hour of his show, because he is our weatherman, he does a lot of, he's our local weather guy, he does a lot of weather-related stuff. He plays Earth and Sky, and he
it covers all comes clear
history.
Now.
he does historical things. So he will be playing the actual newscast.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what the other thing is said on here. Not to apologize, Marianne, because I banged my knee on this thing, and now the screen isn't working. I mean, we got a few ghosts. Oh, that's it. Let's kick the computer. Let's see if that does it.
It's okay.
That's okay. Well, okay. It's disabled, but there was nothing I did, so that's okay.
It was.
I didn't do it, Dad. I didn't do it. You know, we're going to take a musical break, because we've already gone through our first half hour, if you can believe it. But before we do, let's see if I can interpret Ron's weather report. Sunday.
Down at the bottom.
Okay, down at the bottom. Okay, next 3 days. No, today. Today's high. Oh, we have a little cooling. Going to be a high of only 92. And the low today is going to be 56. Winds and wind chill, 15 and a quarter miles east to southeast. So it sounds like it's going to be a little bit cooler. I don't know. I can't interpret that. I'm not a weatherman.
Today's records, temps. Yeah, see?
That's oh, okay. The bottom. Go ahead. Tell them.
That's the bottom. No, it says yesterday actual temp high 103. I remember that. Low 70. Today 99. Low 66.
Okay.
Today's record year was not able to get it. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Ron.
It was 1975 when they had the earthquake. That's what caused it. Well, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, and when we come back from a short musical break, we will we'll actually get into some material that we plan to discuss in the first half hour. But this first half hour is very informative because we talked about all the things going on here at KRBS. My name is Dan Gowerty, and my co-host is Tom Nadel, and we will be back after a short musical break.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up? This is
a
new recording, man.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on?
Hey man, what's your name?
sight. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh.
Right, right on.
Little Marvin Gaye there. Easy for me to say. Little Marvin Gaye music there for you. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other Monday on KRBS 107.1 in Oroville, California, your community-owned radio station. Thanks for joining us this morning. We appreciate you spending some time with us. My name is Dan Gilworthy, along with
Tom Nato.
And now that we got the information about all the updates here at KRBS and our request for you to help fund us, we want to get into some of the topics we have for you today. The first topic we want to talk about, it's kind of a little bit convoluted, but bear with us. And I want to relay this story that happened to me in the last few days. Our son, Sean, recently graduated from UCLA. He has a degree in
congratulations.
Math. Yeah, congratulations. We're very proud of him. He's a 21-year-old graduate, and he's already started his graduate studies as a
senior. So now we are expert.
Yes. He has a degree in mathematics and a major in math and a minor in computer science, and he's going to start teaching this fall at the Los Angeles Unified School District, and he's going to be working at an underperforming school. Actually, it's an underperforming geographic area. It's a brand new high school, so he's very excited about it. We're very proud of him. So he came up for a visit for the last few days, and on Friday or Saturday, he went with his, Sean is the oldest, he went with one of his younger brothers to Albertsons, and the Albertsons near our house has these
Albertsons, for those not familiar, is a grocery store.
Yes, a grocery
supermarket chain.
Right. Thank you very much. And the Albertsons near our house, in the last several months, they replaced several of their regular checkout counters or stands, whatever you want, with these automated ones. So I've instructed, or I've preached, I should say, to my other boys that live at home and my wife, who agrees with me, is that when we go there, and I don't generally like to go there for a number of reasons which we won't get into, but we go there for convenience from time to time, is to not use the automated stands. I always go to the ones that has a live, that have a live person. And my son asked, my youngest son, or one of my younger sons asked me, well, why is that? And I said, well, basically these automated stands are putting people out of work. I said, instead of having two or three cashiers up here now, they have one or two. So somebody has lost their job because of the automation. So we've been doing that for several months. You know, whenever I go there, I you know, even if it takes me a couple more minutes, I always go into the line that has the clerk, because I want to make sure the clerk keeps their job, you know, because they're a member of my community. They make a decent living, and I want to make sure that they still have their job. I don't want to put more money into the hands of Albertsons, the grocery store chain, by using the automated checkout, because that's really what it's doing. So yesterday, on our way out to dinner, we got into a conversation, and Billy, one of the younger children, said, hey, Dad, Sean, you know, and I have a disagreement about the automated checkout stands at Albertsons. And so I asked Sean what it was, and he says, well, you know, it's automation, and, you know, it makes things easier for people. And then I said, well, what about, and just bear in mind, too, Sean is liberal. He's politically liberal kid, he's done diversity training and all this kind of thing at UCLA, and it's not like he went to Bob Jones University or anything like that.
God forbid.
But he's liberal. He's a progressive young man, and he's willing to forego higher fortunes, which he could easily earn, to teach in Los Angeles in an underserving geographic area of the town. So we really are proud of them. But what came
young up, enough to still have a heart.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Give them a few years and they'll really see the real world.
They'll beat that out of them.
But what surprised me more than anything else was what was coming out of his mouth. And he's an intelligent kid. You know, he's like I said, he already started his graduate studies as a freshman, so he'll have a graduate degree a year from now. So it's not like he's a slacker or anything like that. But what came out of his mouth was, it was like he was just regurgitating what he was probably taught in his economics classes at UCLA, basically talking points for groups like the American Enterprise Institute, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute. Basically, he was saying, well, Dad, it's economic Darwinism, and if they lose their jobs, well, kind of tough luck. So what I did, the first thing I did was, I tried to stress to him the importance that these are good-paying jobs that people are losing, you know, they're losing their jobs, and they have families to support, and... excuse me, they have families to support and they're members of the community, and all of a sudden if they have a job that's paying $30,000 or $35,000 a year and they've been doing this for several years and they're kind of their bank of...
And they're just about to retire with a pension.
Right. And they're out of a job because of an automated machine that's going to give the Albertsons Corporation a few more pennies on their earnings to their shareholders who are the mega rich. You know, what good does it do? So he kind of said, well, I understand, you know, but... He stuck with the economic Darwinism theory.
Can I interrupt here?
Yes. Without,
is that those pennies never get to the stockholders? The pennies go to the investors.
Right.
Well, go to the management of the corporation, and the excuse they will probably give is the cost of automation.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. There you go. So Sean kept, you know, he kept on with the economic Darwinism. He says, well, you know, he wasn't saying it quite. He was couching his terminology, much like these conservative think tanks do. They say, well, you know, we can retrain them and all this kind of stuff. And I said, okay, Sean, let's turn this around. I said, Sean, you know, you're going into a profession that is in high demand. Science and math teachers on all levels are in huge demand. You can pick and choose where you're going to work. That's why we're proud of me went to a, you know, underperforming area.
In fact, that's a diminishing group in the United States,
right,
because of the way the economy is going.
Right. And the other thing, you know, plus you add on that the way, here in California, Arnold Schwarzenegger wants to lengthen the time that a teacher becomes tenured, and they've been under the assault of the conservative teachers themselves for several years. So I said, well, Sean, how about this? You know, would you agree or not? Would you agree with me that there is a shortage of math and science teachers in the United States? He said, oh, absolutely. He says, you know, there's not enough of us out there. I said, yeah, I agree with you. For everything I read, everything you tell me, that seems to be the case. I said, what would stop the Los Angeles Unified School District or any school district in this country because of the shortage, and they could economically justify it, outsource with the technology, you ballyhoo, outsource teaching jobs of math to somebody in India.
And hold televised classes.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that's plausible. I did it in the 70s, in the late 70s, when I went to the University of Michigan in Dearborn. We had our finance class was done over closed-circuit TV from Ann Arbor, much less today with the internets and all the high-speed service. What is going to stop a teacher... A school district from hiring a teacher in, say, India or China or any place in the world, South America, it can be any place, Russia, from teaching a mathematics class? And Sean kind of was stunned, you know. He was really stunned. He said, well, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I guess it could happen, but you lose the personal touch. And I said, well, what about the cashier? When I go to a checkout stand, I like to have a cashier so I can check and make sure everything's okay, I'm not overcharged and whatnot. But I guess the broader point of what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that young people coming out of our universities, and just this one case, and this is somebody that's you know, predisposed to progressive thinking to start with, it seems as though they are almost being indoctrinated
exactly
into this kind of economic Darwinism that the Republicans and conservatives and several Democrats, for that matter, have used for the last 30 or 40 years.
Theoretically good on the ground, not good.
Right. And that was what I was trying to explain to Sean. And Sean, because he's a math major in computer science, they think in very quantitative terms. I said, Sean, you have to think not necessarily in these quantitative terms, but in the qualitative terms. And let's just take the example of teaching math. And I asked him, would you agree that if you're teaching math and you're in the classroom and you can help that student right after class and you can sit down and show them on the pencil and paper how to do it, isn't that better than having a teacher any place but in that room? It could be in across town or it could be across the world, teaching that you can't actually sit down next to that person physically, show them how to do it on a paper.
There's also something displayed here. Is I don't know if you've noticed it, but people tend to define the world in terms of their own experience,
right,
and the experience of the people in their social group. So when you start thinking about Darwinism and you happen to be 23 years old and all your friends are 23 years old and they can compete for this and that, they're leaving out of their calculations all the people are 40 and 50,
right,
still got to make a living.
Right.
So they have the additional burden probably of kids, a house, you know, a car payment to make,
right,
because the car they're driving is one the parents got from a graduation,
right,
present, and
right,
they're not quite married, and you can see where that goes, is that they're promoting their own selves. Their own selves, isn't that great English? Promoting themselves at the disparagement of everybody else.
Right. Excuse me. And what it does, too, is this kind of economic Darwinism that's being taught, I think, in colleges, in high schools, and throughout our own education system. And a lot of this comes back to groups like the Cato Group, American Enterprise Institute, Heritage Foundation. They've been around for 40 years now after the defeat of Goldwater in 1964. They have pounded this message into in such a way that it's become almost, for many people, conventional wisdom. Well, you're going to lose your job at some point anyhow. You're going to be out of something, and it's kind of your own fault. You know, that's another part of it, is technology might replace you, and it's going to be your own responsibility ultimately to overcome these obstacles that are thrown in your way. And the other thing it does, as we're talking here, it kind of, you know, pits one generation, and this is always a kind of a classic struggle anyhow, usually in the past more culturally, but now economically, it's pitting one generation against an older generation, because people in their 40s and 50s, you're right, are much different. They're generally higher paid than the people coming right out of the school.
It's the icebergs for you and me, Dan. You know what the Eskimos do when they get too old?
You
know,
oh, yeah, they
you're
put them
chewing
the
food up and you're not producing anything. They put
right
them on the icebergs and float them
That's
away.
Right.
Sayonara.
Sayonara, yeah, absolutely. But I the only reason I bring this up is because
that's social Darwinism,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that is.
That's economic as well.
Yeah, social Darwinism. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me, you know, just in this one case, if somebody like Sean is got this kind of belief system, and he's an intelligent kid too, and I'm not bragging him up or anything. He's well schooled and he's knowledgeable and he reads. But if he's just taking this information that he got in his two economics classes he had in his undergraduate studies, and just kind of regurgitating this stuff, much less people that are conservative.
But you know, that's because nobody else told him any different. That shows you the drift in education these days, not the liberal institution that the conservatives try to make it out to be.
That's right. That brings up a very good point, is because, and then maybe this goes to a whole another societal aspect. We'll just cover this a little bit because we have some other topics we want to cover. But if you think about it, it's people, free expression is, you know, actually becoming discouraged in our society, if not, you know, it's not illegal yet, but, you know, they talk about liberal universities and liberal doctors or liberal professors. Just think of the fury that happened over the comments of Ward Churchill a while back over his comments on the 9/11. They wanted to get this guy who was a fully tenured professor kicked out of the University of Colorado. Remember Ward Churchill? So, you know, they've created a system not only where they indoctrinate you, but dissent is discouraged, punished. If not discouraged, punished. So,
you know, Dan, as you're explaining this, I just realized, didn't we just get 24/7?
Yes, yes.
Aren't we moving towards automation here? Are we going to be out of a volunteer job. later? Can you? We'll have to like pay to be on. Well, that's commercial TV.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to have to pay.
Don't make money, Williams.
Right.
But we'll be out.
But I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that was a really relevant conversation because I think it's a good indicator. It's and a canary in the coal mine, if you
will. And it's important that you did that because there are other people out there listening, both of them, and it may not have occurred to them or given a way to express their suspicions that this is happening.
Right. So, with that, we're going to move on to another topic. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street on 107.1 KRBS, listener-supported radio, community-owned radio here in Oroville, California. Thanks for joining us today. Tom, you had something to say?
No, we're going to just now start talking about things you may have read in the newspaper or heard on television.
Or maybe haven't read about or should read about.
Or are there topics that may have heard only the other side of the story?
The next thing we want to talk about, and we've been talking about this for quite some time here on Left Turn on Bird Street, is the impending real estate bust. And I do believe it is going to bust. There's this several signs that I see around us that are maybe aside from economic signs and economic data, literally several signs that we are in a speculative market in real estate and what the ramifications are going to be for the average American. And for those of you with any appreciation of history, I don't know if you recall this, Tom, but I certainly recall going to cocktail parties or social functions in the late 90s, and every place you went, people were talking about the money they were making on their stock options from work, the money they were making in the 401k, the money they were making on a tip from, you know, their plumber, all this stock market speculation had really run amok. It had run wild. And then, of course, shortly thereafter, the internet bubble and the technology bubble of the late 90s burst. You have from a historical perspective or a graphic perspective, you had the NASDAQ, which was the index was at somewhere like almost 6,000 points. Today it trades around 2,000 points. It lost almost two-thirds of its value. Actually, more than that because it got down to about 1,000 points. The Dow Jones Industrial Average went down about 20%. All these stock averages went down substantially. The only reason I'm making this reference is every place I go now, not every place, a lot of places I go, people talk about it's like substitute stock with real estate or a rental home that they're about to buy. And they're just running prices up on properties extraordinarily high, and is being supported really by low interest rates. So, and we found a story on Counterpunch that fairly well explains it. And Tom, why don't you tell our listeners about that particular story?
Okay, this is headlined "Doomsday Approaches: The End of the Housing Bubble." The author is Mike Whitney. Now, he's not an economist, but a well-informed person. And I'm going to read a fair amount of this because he makes several very good points. And he writes from a personal perspective.
Right.
Whitney says, "I sold my home 3 weeks ago, anticipating what I believe will be economic Armageddon in the United States. It wasn't an easy thing to do. My wife and I have lived in the same home for 25 years, raised both of our children there, and owned the property outright, without any loans or mortgage. The house was paid for in sweat equity, that is, by wielding a shovel day in and day out in my one-man landscape business. I don't say that for sympathy, but to illustrate that we played by the rules, worked hard, paid our taxes, and took advantage of the American dream of home ownership. All that has changed. I sold my home for one reason: George W. Bush. He and his protege at the Federal Reserve have submerged the country into a morass of unsustainable debt, disrupted the nation's economic equilibrium, and thrust us towards fiscal disaster. They've also generated a humongous housing bubble through their irresponsible and self-serving manipulation of interest rates. The facts are astonishing, and here they are. This is what caught my eye. The current housing bubble is, quote, larger than the global stock market bubble in the late 1990s, an increase over 5 years of 80% of GDP, that's a gross domestic product, or America's stock market bubble in the late 1920s, 55% of GDP. In other words, it looks like the biggest bubble in history. Now, close quotes, and that's a quote from The Economist magazine, very respected conservative magazine. The banks have lowered their, we're now back to Whitney speaking, the banks have lowered the standards for home loans to such an extent that the traditional loan of 20% down and a fixed interest rate is virtually a thing of the past. Instead, those conservative practices have been replaced with, quote, creative financing.
Creative accounting, my favorite.
Schemes that put the entire housing market at risk. Consider this. In 2004, quote, one-fourth of all home buyers, including 42% of first-time buyers, close quotes, made no down payment, the New York Times says. No down payment? Sorry, but if a buyer can't come up with at least $4,000 or $5,000 for a down payment, he shouldn't qualify for a home loan. Equally troubling is the fact that nearly one-third of all new mortgages this year call for interest-only payments. In California, it's almost half. That's here. That's as New York Times says that. This tells us that a large number of new buyers can barely make their payments, but are gambling that their property value will go up enough to justify their investment. This is equity roulette, a shell game that anticipates that salaries will go up while interest stays low. Is that a reasonable judgment? No. Greenspan has said that he will continue to ratchet up interest rates to head off inflation. And he goes on here. I'm not going to try all of it, and I'll pick out a few follow-up paragraphs. But, Dan, we have talked about this. You're more informed on this stuff because you actually own a home.
Right.
I'm a sort of a interested bystander because I don't. But it even a fool like me can see this.
Well, the whole housing situation is so out of kilter on so many different levels. First of all, you know, what you hear on the surface, no down payment on a house, and the way people will justify that, or mortgage brokers, real estate people, even politicians, they'll say is, well, that gives up a lower people in lower economic levels of society an opportunity to own a home. Yeah, it does. It does give them that opportunity to own a home. The problem comes is instead of having a 30-year mortgage, all of a sudden you have a 35-year mortgage. People that are in the lower ends of the economic strata, and I'm not making any judgments whatsoever, generally make less money. So once, and this is what's going to happen, once interest rates ratchet go up and if people start losing their jobs, these are going to be the first people they're going to own that lose their homes. They're going to lose their homes, and then you have a situation where you have people that are upside down, meaning they own more on their house than it's worth because they have to pay the interest. Even if the market goes up a little bit in 5 years, they still have to pay that interest. You buy a house for $400,000, and you finance it for $400,000 with these interest-only loans for the first 5 years. I don't know the exact number, but you might actually be taking a mortgage for $450,000. You know, the first 5 years paying interest only, just to get that down to the $400,000 level. I don't know whatever. I don't have the particular numbers, but 2 or 3 years into it, somebody gets sick, they get a divorce. They're going to lose their house, and then they're going to owe more on their house if the market doesn't continue to escalate. And this is all based on speculation. This is all land and real estate speculation. If that thing doesn't go up, and you owe $425,000, and let's say the market's gone south a little bit, and the thing's only worth $390,000. That thing's upside down. And then what happens is then the banks are going to get it, and this is going to be like the savings and loan thing all over again. It's just a house of cards being built. But go ahead, you have something else to read.
You're not the only one saying this precise problem. Whitney is also saying it this way. The current problem is compounded by the dramatic surge of speculation in the housing market. As The Economist says, a study by the National Association of Realtors, These are the guys that like this system.
Absolutely.
Found that 23% of all American houses bought in 2004 were for investment, not owner occupation.
What percent? 24?
24, wow. 23%.
23.
Another 13% were bought as second homes. Investors are prepared to buy houses they will rent out at a loss just because they think prices will keep rising, the very definition of a financial bubble.
Right.
Now, if you add those two, the 23 and the 13%, that's 36%.
Right.
Of everything bought is just sort of air stuff.
It's speculative.
Mm. It really is. What will happen to the U.S. economy when the jobs that depend on new home sales vanish overnight? What will happen to these speculative buyers when the market flattens out or economy takes a sudden dip? Over the past 4 years, consumer spending and residential construction have together accounted for 90% of the total growth in GDP and over two-fifths of all private sector jobs created since 2001 have been in housing-related sectors such as construction, real estate, and mortgage brokering. They say broking here, but I think they mean brokering. Two out of every five private sector jobs are now entirely dependent on an industry that is built on pure quicksand.
Right.
Now, you know, it's really interesting. As I've mentioned this before, I'll mention it again. There is a area just south of Marysville, California, where I live, that's a floodplain hemmed in with levees in which the housing is going up. Lickety-split. Sticks going up, as they say. Sticks going up all over the place. And if I'm right in my prediction, and Whitney is correct, and you are correct, there'll be a lot of houses half built when the collapse comes, and so we're going to have nothing but sticks standing up with no occupants, and those who are living there are subject to the floodplain,
right?
The flood that's likely to happen when the underfunded levees go, and so we'll have nothing but no profit and all loss.
Right. This whole situation is reminiscent of me of the late 90s with the stock market bubble. But this is going to be worse than that because it didn't impact as many people as this is going to impact, in my opinion. I think this is going to have far-ranging impacts because, first of all, as it says, there's speculation. And once, you know, this is the part that's dangerous. 24% of the houses on the market, you know, I did like a little survey the other day in my local paper. And I figured out what a house costing $400,000, the mortgage on it would be roughly about, with property taxes, insurance, no down payment, and that's what a lot of these are doing, it's going to be about roughly about $3,000 a month. I looked in the paper, what are $400,000 houses, three or four bedrooms, two or three baths, they're running from anywhere from about $1,500 to $2,000 a month. So these investors have $1,000 to make up in terms of their outflow. That's $1,000 they're paying out. So they're speculating $1,000 a month that they're gonna, when they sell it, that their return is gonna be much higher. When that doesn't happen, these guys will walk away from the house. What happens when you flood the market? Basically, when houses are when you have too many houses on the market, it's a simple supply and demand. When the demand or the supply way outstrips the supply, the prices are going to fall, and they're going to fall quickly. And that's, according to this, it's going to hit 90% of the new GDP growth, which means that we're going to be go right into a recession. So I think a lot of this is going to be at the feet of the Federal Reserve because they're encouraging this low interest. And, you know, it's not that I'm against people having houses. I'm not. But I think realistically, the people that are going to benefit out of this, because the poor schmuck who's buying it with 0% down is the one who's probably going to get screwed and have a repo or a bankruptcy on his. And the bankruptcy laws are now very punitive. It's the mortgage brokers, it's the finance companies and the banks that are just squeezing every penny they can out of the system right now, and they're running this thing up. And then when it heads south, they've made their money, and the people, the speculators, I don't necessarily feel sorry for them, but it's going to hurt the people that are legitimately trying to buy houses, trying to move up the economic ladder.
Oh, Dan, you're prescient because he goes on to say, so why would banks foolishly loan money to people who can't even scrape together a few thousand dollars for a down payment or who can scarcely meet their interest-only obligations? The reason is simple, because they are not the ones taking the risk.
Right.
Mortgage loans are acquired by investment banks and chopped up into various securities where they are sold in mutual funds, hedge funds, and pension funds, etc. And then it goes on. I want to skip down to the summary. Shaky lending, interest-only loans, no down payments, a U.S. government that is $8 trillion in debt due to Washington's profligate spending, and a ticking time bomb of adjustable rate mortgages that will reset within 3 years, the table is set for a disaster of biblical proportions. If we hit a bump in the economic road ahead, rising gas prices, recession, the land of the free will be knee-deep in bankruptcies and foreclosures. We'll be fighting for a soft spot under the freeway on-ramp.
Well, with that, we are going to take a quick musical break, and we'll be back after the start of our second hour. You've been listening to Left Turn on Bird Street on 107.1 KRBS in Oroville, California. We'll be right back.